States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we hear from Annie Morris, who was a demo rider at the 2015 Succeed USDF FEI Trainers Conference, presented by the FEI Judge General Stephen Clark, and Annie also has a training tip for us. But first, Vicky Hammers-O'Neill shares her perspective of the Trainers Conference that she attended as an auditor.
I thought it was excellent. There were great demo horses and riders, and I found Stephen Clark to be quite articulate and creative, but classical in all of his exercises. And I just really enjoyed it.
What was the format?
There were the same demo riders rode both days on the same horses. And there was a variety. The first horse each day was a younger horse, a six-year-old, who was very well presented. And he used that horse essentially to talk about the qualities, I guess, that would be lower on the pyramid of training in terms of just the purity of the gates, the horse's level of acceptance of the aids and rideability, the amount of suppleness that he had both laterally and longitudinally. And on day two with that horse, they worked a little bit more on adding some power to what was happening. But one of the things that he said was that the more impulsion you have, the more submission you need. And that was a little bit of a theme, an ongoing theme, was that sort of concept through the weekend.
So what did you get from that the early part of the conference then, and that you were really able to get reinforced over the 2 days, aside from that concept that you said that seemed to be the theme throughout?
Well, he was big, which most people at that level are, on the reactivity from the horse. He basically said, when you ask for something, it needs to happen. And that was not just going from the leg, but it was also whoaing, you know. And, you know, basically he said, if you pull on the reins, they should stop. You know, it was that blunt. And the second horse that was presented and the third horse were very different horses. The second horse was a little too go-y and didn't stay on the half halt well. And he put the horse on the circle, and they did transitions. And he said, I don't want it to be 7 strides later. I want it to happen when you ask. The third horse had the opposite problem, that his whoa button was really good. His go button wasn't as good. Same exact exercise for the exact opposite issue, but the same result was expected, that the horse became more reactive to all the aids.
So how did he approach a solution for the other horse then?
The horse that was too go-y or the horse
yes.
that didn't go?
Yes.
The horse that was too go-y, he just basically wanted that horse to halt. If she asked for halt, she wanted it to happen in 1 stride, not in 4 strides. And, she the rider. And if she asked the horse to trot off and the horse wanted to run through her, she was to halt again immediately. And they put the horse in shoulder in, which also helped with the balance and the throughness. And it was quite successful. And the second day, you could see the difference because the horse was definitely staying more on her aids. And as a result, she could let the horse's neck out more. And so it made a very much better presentation. And he alternated some. He did exercises, but he also had almost every horse ride a test to whatever their level was. And that was really interesting to watch, too, to see if they could then carry what they were working on into the test.
Now, what about the other horses? Give us some examples of what you saw change over the 2 days with new exercises.
Some horses were... I'm trying to go through my head. There was a horse that had an absolutely spectacular trot, and they were very careful with her because she had a tendency to get tight, and when she would get tight, she'd come a little bit off the aids. And so the focus there was very much on keeping her focus and her level of relaxation at a place where the rider could keep optimum communication. And, for example, they played a little bit with the passage, and what he said was simply that the horse needed to understand the difference between the tempo for the passage and the tempo for the collective trot, and the rhythm, how the rhythm changes, because the rhythm of the passage is more cadenced, obviously, than the rhythm for the collective trot. And once the horse understands that, you can allow the power to develop. Rather than saying, I'm going to passage, you allow it to develop as the horse has more understanding. So that was a very basic, it was an exercise in doing less almost rather than doing more. And it really created just an absolutely spectacular passage on this horse. It was very, very cool to watch.
So all of these horses then were at Grand Prix level or Prix Saint-Georges, were they?
No, the there was a sort of second level-ish horse. There was a fourth level horse. This horse that I was just speaking of is schooling all of the I-1 and schooling into the Grand Prix, but had definitely not competed at that level. Let me think who else. Jennifer Baumert rode a very nice horse, and he was tight and got a little behind her the first day. And as a result, she had straightness issues. And so that was a different focus in working on putting the horse straighter and into the, you know, really straightforward into the rein. And then the second day, the horse was excellent. I mean, she rode great. So that was, again, a different aspect of things. This horse needs to be straight. But the straightness was, again, related to the horse's level of acceptance of the driving aids into the bridle. Because he went in and kind of went, whoa, what is this? You know, all these people.
So how many horses did he work with then over the 2 days?
I believe there were 8. And I say that, and I should probably check, but I'm 90% sure that. So 8 each day.
So what was your biggest takeaway then from that conference? And because, of course, you've attended others, Vicky, and we learn different things from different trainers. But what were your biggest takeaways from Stephen in not just what he picked up on, but his entire ethos, really, and the culture of working with him?
Well, I felt that he was very classical. In his choices of exercises, nothing was funny or random. And he was very good at explaining the exercises. And honestly, I have listened to other judges that sometimes aren't as good at that, because they, you know, they maybe are really excellent judges, but they aren't necessarily, that's not what their focus isn't on training anymore, it's on judging. And I thought he had quite a nice selection of exercises and used them to reinforce that the horse always must respond, use them to reinforce that the horse must stay relaxed, that, you know, the straightness is imperative, and that those things create that harmony between horse and rider. And that was pretty much what kept flowing through the whole 2 days.
And how many people do you know roughly were attending to audit the conference, Vicky?
I want to say there were probably 200 plus. I don't know the number for sure, but it was well attended and well worth it. I was very, very glad that I went.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much for coming on the program and summarizing it for us.
You're very welcome.
And now Annie Morris tells us what it was like to be a demo rider.
I was riding a horse whose show name is Julia's Magic. We call him Cato in the barn. And he's owned by a fabulous woman named Denise Sarnoff, who has had horses at Cloverleaf for years, which is the farm I work for.
And what experience had he had coming into that conference, and what were you hoping to get from that?
Well, he is 8 this year, and we actually haven't shown him much. So he hadn't had a bunch of experience in front of people, even though we have taken him away from home to do clinics. And luckily, we had recently done the symposium with Ingrid Klimke that Nita put on this fall. So even though he hadn't been out much, he had the right kind of experience to tolerate a big crowd of people. I was hoping to get the input from such a fabulous clinician, and also to put him in front of people, see how he responds in the environment, and kind of be seen a little bit by the dressage community that I'm a part of.
So tell us how it went for you then. What was that like on your first ride on the first day?
The first rider, so I had kind of an easy part. I was showing like the paces and the gates and some basic trueness exercises. So it was really no pressure for me or for Cato. And we kind of, since it seemed easy, I think, we just went through our work. And I know he felt really good. The horse felt really good. And I think we made a good impression.
Now, what kind of comments did you get from Stephen Clark about that first ride then?
He actually said the funniest thing. First out, I was walking, and Cato does have a very nice walk. And he said, basically, if Annie were to get a low score doing a movement with this walk, she should be shot. And I thought it was so funny, his sense of humor. That was not what I was expecting him to say. But aside from that, like he very honestly gave us good feedback, positive feedback about the gaits of this particular horse. And also about his basic training. He thought that he had been brought along really well. And I thought that reflected well upon our farm, as I've been riding him since he came to the U.S., but under the influence of Beth Ballmer, who is the head trainer at our farm. And I thought it was just a really big compliment that he thought that from all of the experience he has and everything he's seen.
So what was going through your mind then after you'd finished that ride that day and you are obviously thinking about overnight?
Well, I knew that the next day he would want to up the ante a little bit, but I didn't feel nervous or pressured again. I felt really confident because I was happy with how the horse responded to the environment, and I was happy with the basic impression I was getting from Stephen Clark, and I mentally prepared myself to get the horse a little more in front of the leg and a little more collected and a little more pizzazz. But I was feeling like a little glow from the compliments he gave us. And I, again, didn't feel nervous or pressured. I felt really excited.
So going into the second day then, what were you preoccupied with as you went in there? Did you have any new expectations that you carried forward from the previous day?
Not particularly, besides what I said about the maybe showing more stuff. I mean, instead of showing the paces and the gates, we were doing some lateral collected work. And I had a feeling that he was going to ask for that. So I think we were ready. I just was thinking again about keeping him in front of the leg, keeping him relaxed but responsive. And I think he responded really well to that.
So what were your takeaways from that session?
Well, what I thought was so fabulous was how methodical he was about going through the movements. Like, first, you have to have a good basic collected trot. Then you have to have that trot and be able to do shoulder in. And then if you want to improve your shoulder in, then you can change the trot and maybe increase the tempo and then decrease the tempo and play with it that way, where it would be easy when you're changing all these little tempo things to just be unsteady. But no, the way that he brought it, the way that he presented it, made it really make sense and not let us get into a point where the tempo was getting lost. Like, we were changing the tempo, but it was entirely on purpose. And what started to happen with the changes of tempo in the lateral work was he started to lift himself more, get a little snappier behind and freer in the shoulder. And also, maybe the most important was I felt the horse really on my feet. Like, I could make a change of tempo in a moment. And then bring him back again. And he was like just waiting to hear my feet. What do I want next? It was really a really great feeling. And I take that away, because that's something since the trainers conference I've been able to do with the same horse and with the other horses I ride is incredibly useful.
Do you have now new tools in your toolbox as a result of the trainers conference?
Yeah, as I said, the changes of tempo and the lateral work might have been my favorite, but also when I wasn't riding, of course, I was watching the trainers conference, and some of the things I really liked was how he started a leg yield, for example, when you're riding across the diagonal and then you turn it into a leg yield by moving the horse parallel to the wall, like after you've already been on the diagonal for a few strides. I thought that was really useful to keep the horse forward. I liked some of the exercises he did for just getting a horse more responsive, like sometimes take a little hand gallop or this or that to kind of make it a little playful that the horse wants to go on their own, which a lot of my horses are hot, but I can still use that in the back of my head. And I just, again, the main thing I liked about the whole overall trainers conference and was he really broke everything down that it was a simple method. And again, you weren't getting lost in the little comments he made. You were able to follow the path of what he was getting at, because he was so methodical about describing what you were doing and why, and how it built upon what you did before.
Well, it sounds like a very richly rewarding experience for you and your horse, and things there that you can apply to other training that you're doing with the other horses and in competition.
Absolutely.
And now Annie shares a training tip for the turn on the forehand.
First of all, what is the turn on the forehand? That's when the horse's front legs are stopped and the rider moves the hind legs around the front legs. The horse will take steps to arrange himself to keep, he will take steps with his front legs to arrange himself, and the hind legs will actually cross on each step. What would be ideal is if the horse can do the turn on the forehand in the rhythm of the walk. It shouldn't be slower or a different rhythm than the walk. And also, just like the leg yield, the horse is flexed a little bit away from the direction his hind legs are going. So if you're going to do a turn on the forehand off the left leg, the horse is flexed left, the front legs are stopped, and the hindquarters move off your left leg to the right, and you can do a couple steps, you can do 180 degrees, you can do 360 degrees. It depends on what you're asking for. So the reason that you teach the turn on the forehand is it's actually a little bit more basic even than a leg yield in some ways. And so it's a good tool to use to teach the horse the idea of yielding to the leg, because in fact you can even do it from the ground. If you're on the ground and you stand next to your horse and you hold the reins, you can move his hindquarters away from you, either with pressure from your hand or from the whip. And that kind of explains, like, I don't always mean go. Sometimes when I push on you, I want you to move sideways. So then you can do the same thing maybe on top of the horse with help from the ground. And then that's a way to teach the horse to yield to the leg. Another reason it's important, and the same reason the leg yield is important, is it increases suppleness. You're teaching your horse to cross his legs. He has to loosen his hips. He has to flex a little bit and keep his balance while crossing his legs. It's a good basic suppleness exercise. It's also a really good exercise for obedience, and you can use it to help the obedience. Let's say your horse doesn't want to move away from the leg. This is really clear to explain it to him. And even if you were, for example, doing a leg yield, again, we'll say a leg yield off the left leg, and next thing you know, he's kind of just falling sideways through the right shoulder and not crossing his legs at all. From whatever gate you are in, you could carefully bring him back to a halt and turn it into a turn on the forehand off the left leg. And that would be a way to correct the horse in a way that he maybe understands better the sideways aid versus the forward aid. And also, I'm talking about the leg here, moving sideways from the leg, but maybe if he's falling through the right shoulder in that leg heel, the problem is that he doesn't want to stop from the right rein, and therefore the turn on the forehand explains that a little better because you are actually at a halt when you begin it. Another thing that I think it's really good for, and again, I was saying it's a precursor to leg yield, that you use it with leg yield. It's definitely something that you would teach to a young horse. It's not necessarily an upper-level exercise because it's not a collecting exercise. But what it does do is it teaches your horse that he has four legs. Some horses go around thinking always about their front legs. In fact, most horses do, especially when you are beginning to train them, and this is a way to say, look, you have hind legs, and they have to pay attention to them, and they have to cross them, and they have to move them independently from the front legs when you ask with your legs. So it's a really good basic exercise for those things. So how do you ride a turn on the forehand? You can start, what I would do, as I said before, make sure the horse understands from the ground. You might want to have a ground person with you if you're going to begin this. But what you can do is, if you have not a solid wall, like an indoor arena wall, but if you have like a rail, like an outdoor arena fence or a rail, you can halt alongside the fence. Let's say we're tracking to the right. So your left leg is up against the wall. Not too close. But what you'll do is you can flex the horse left, and you can actually push him off the left leg. And the fence there will explain to him as he starts to turn that you don't want him to walk forward. You want him to stay a little still with the front legs. And in the beginning, when you're explaining this to the horse, it's okay if they just take a couple steps and then maybe pause and then take another couple. When you use your leg, you want to use it in a rhythm to say, like, move over, and then your leg is quiet. Move over, then your leg is quiet. And then your left rein maybe asks for just a touch of flexion, and then your right rein is the one that keeps him from walking away, and then your right leg is quiet. So the right rein is the one that will probably be doing the half halt. And again, you would halt before you start it and then ask for a few steps at a time in the walk. And then you can do it anywhere. You can do it on the center line. You can do it, like I said, during a leg yield, as a bit of a exaggeration of the sideways moving aid. And then an exercise that you can use to build on that, and that really helps a horse who wants to be kind of disengaged, for example, in an upward transition. You can do the turn on the forehand along the wall, and once you've turned 180 degrees and you're pointed the other way, pick up a trot. And the horse was just thinking about his hind legs when you were doing the turn on the forehand, and then he pushes into the trot, hopefully, from the hind legs. So that's a good suppling and engaging, not engaging, but kind of thinking about engagement exercise for a lower level horse as you move him up.
Our thanks to Annie and to Vicky Hammers O'Neill for being our guest this week. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store, so you can listen to it on the go on your smartphone app. And while you're online, be sure to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education. That's at usdf.org. Until next week, thanks for your company, and remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.